Sometimes you just want the quick facts. No opinions, no speculation. I'm Claire Thornton, an audio editor with USA Today. My team works around the clock to bring you the Five Things podcast. Every morning, me and my co-host Taylor Wilson help you know what to keep an eye out for that day. We always have a fresh mix of stories, from politics to entertainment to sports, covering all parts of the country. On Sundays, you can lean back with in-depth episodes about stories you may have heard earlier that week. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows and start listening to Five Things today.
Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Next week marks the end of 2021, and it was an eventful year in Florida politics, from battles over COVID-19 public health policy to the fallout from the Capitol riot here in Florida and the early jockeying around the 2022 and even 2024 elections. We're going to do something a little different on the podcast today and look back on the top stories of the year. As always, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and I'm joined by Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy and Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. We'll get to our top stories soon, but first... Well, not only are we looking at the top political stories of 2021 today, but we're also going to throw out some numbers that exemplified the year that was in Florida. John, do you have a good 2021 number for us?
I sure do, Zach. It sounds kind of like a bad thermometer reading while you're taking your temperature during our second holiday season with COVID-19, but my number is 91.2.
91.2. All right. How about you, Antonio?
You know, I've been coming in low all the year, so I'm going to end the year with a 6 million.
6 million. All right. A nice big number to round out the year, but I got you beat. My number is 215 million. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll tell you what they mean in the year that was in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, this pandemic has been rough from the start, but the politics around it really got nasty in 2021 here in Florida as Governor Ron DeSantis hardened his opposition to public health mandates and went to war with his critics. The governor's office battled with school districts over mask policies and fought the federal government on vaccine mandates. John, how would you describe what happened with the pandemic in Florida this year?
Well, it just seems that the governor has kind of chosen to stake out a position as kind of a permanent enemy to the Biden administration. And part of that seems to be resisting COVID measures that have been advanced by the White House and conventional health experts like the CDC and others. Of course, you know, the most visible part of that opposition was when school districts followed those guidelines when it came to masks. DeSantis drew the line at requirements and undermined a lot of these strategies by leaving it up to parents to decide whether a kid wears a mask or not. Same goes with vaccines. We had a special session of the legislature just last month that was driven by the governor to oppose federal vaccine mandates in the workplace. DeSantis has kind of zigged where others zagged by seizing on the use of monoclonal antibodies, which help those already sickened by the virus. He's been touting the availability of these, but still squawking at the Biden administration for not making enough of these available. Of course, the Biden administration has promoted vaccines, not quite as much treatment with antibodies, though that all is part of the regimen for treating those who are sickened. But he's trying to keep people from getting sick, would seem to be the theme.
And the criticism of DeSantis is that he was kind of promoting these antibody treatments sort of in lieu of promoting vaccines, right?
Yeah.
They're not mutually exclusive, are they?
No, they're not. But he was kind of, it's subtle, like so much of what the governor does, but it was something where he would, unveil these availabilities of the monoclonal antibodies in different sites around the state that were set up, yet never mentioning that, vaccines first. He kind of grudgingly acknowledges that vaccines are important, but he always seems to put forward, an alternate treatment. And, that maybe is reflected in his hiring of Surgeon General Joseph Ladapo. He's known for his public questioning of vaccines. He's clearly more of an advocate for treatment than prevention. DeSantis divides. both politically and with the fight against COVID-19. This seems to be how he rolls, you know, going back to his earliest days in Congress as a founding member of the Arch Conservative Freedom Caucus, which had its own problems with their own Republican Party's more establishment members. You know, DeSantis kind of flourished in that era of Trump, and he's still living it. We've heard from him on, you know, bans on critical race theory, banning transgender athletes from high school sports, you know, blaming immigrants for drug trafficking and violence, and siding with enhancing law enforcement over any kind of reflection on the meaning of the Black Lives Matter movement. But, you know, his use of a battering ram against school boards and the Biden administration on COVID-19 policies have helped him raise his profile nationally. But he's he certainly has coarsened the political conversation in this state and created an us versus them approach to governing. But he does appeal to many people who, for them, this pandemic is over, you know, socially. They want everything back to normal and are tired of these hectoring guidelines from the Biden administration. But DeSantis also has separated himself from those Floridians who, public health-wise, realize that the pandemic is not over and they want governments to do more to help end COVID-19, not accommodate it. So the governor has separated us into two piles, those with him and those against him. And that's how he's leading. And I think we'll see that's how he runs for re-election in this coming year. We'll also see whether he's correctly banked that he's got the bigger pile of voters right now.
John, I mean, the governor has obviously become really polarizing over the last year. But how much of that is style versus his actual policies? Because, you know, he's really kind of employed a sort of bombastic us against them, as you said, style, which is sort of how, you know, politics is played to a large degree these days. And that's how you rile up your base. And it has, you know, caused him to get attention from the GOP base. But I mean, is his style what's you know, turning off his critics? Or do you think that his policies have also been unpopular? Because some of his policies, things like, you know, keeping schools open with minimal disruption for parents, things like that. I mean, you know, no lockdowns. I mean, Joe Biden is agrees with some of those things. I mean, there's no push from the federal government to close schools anymore. I mean, some people would say that that's a bit of a straw man now that the general consensus has gone away from that. But the governor was out in front on some of these things. What do you think? What is his scorecard when it comes to managing the pandemic?
Well, his scorecard on managing the pandemic, I don't think is particularly strong. This state has, you know, reeled in the pandemic. We're going through another spike right now with the Omicron virus and the very variant. On that point, I don't think he has much to point to. However, on other policies across the board, I think you're right. As far as the public, I think, does support keeping schools open. I think they do want to be open more than, you know, what had been the original approach of, again, states like New York, California, some of these blue states where DeSantis will frequently point to as taking horrible steps that are very onerous on the public, and then at the same time still having, you know, massive outbreaks of COVID-19. So that has endured. So the governor, forward-facing policies have been something that I think a lot of Floridians do support. And again, when it comes to his managing of state government, that has been, you know, relatively successful, especially looking back to, you know, there were problems with getting, you know, unemployment benefits out back in 2020 during the height of the pandemic. But that some of the heightened debate seems to have cooled a little bit on that, although there are still problems with people trying to get their unemployment. But, you know, all told, I don't know what kind of grade you give him at this point, you know, because his policies have been more or less accepted, I guess, yet somehow the style in which he advances them, as you point out, seems to really polarize Floridians.
Antonio, what do you think? Does DeSantis come out ahead politically because of his pandemic policies, or does he have more baggage this after this year?
You know, Zach, it's more like a mixed bag. In the governor's favor, as John has pointed out, he has right now a message that will resonate with the 2022 electorate. Specifically, he kept the economy open, and that has proven popular. Florida is not a Fortune 500 economy. Florida is a mom and pop economy. And those small and medium-sized businesses fear lockdown as much as COVID, and actually some worry more about a shutdown than the latest variant. The governor has also played to the fringes with these anti-mask mandates and flirted with the anti-vax crowd by sending mixed messages on vaccines, which at one point he referred to as jabs. And recently he called protective public health measures in the face of the Omicron variant insanity.
Yeah, and most recently, Antonio, when he was asked about whether he got the booster, he was like kind of sort of fumbled his way through it and said, I got whatever the regular whatever was. I mean, it was kind of an odd response, like either you got it or you didn't. I mean, he seems to have really kind of pulled back from even promoting the boosters or anything like that.
Yeah, but then look what happened to Trump and O'Reilly when they started talking about getting the boosters and getting the vaccines, and they got booed at that.
Right.
That show they were doing. Look, all of this, you could argue, has made Florida a magnet for red voters in blue states who decided to move to Florida. That may be one reason why Republicans now, for the first time ever, outnumbered Democrats in total voter registrations. Now, look, the downside, and again, John also pointed this out, the downside is 62,000 Floridians have perished because of the virus on DeSantis's watch. More Sunshine Staters have died from COVID than the number of U.S. combat fatalities in Vietnam. And let's face it, too many of those died needlessly, and some would say foolishly. Overall, a recent survey put the governor's approval rating at a so-so 52%. A survey of the popularity ratings of U.S. governors that I saw last month put DeSantis's 52% in the bottom third. And it is fair to argue that the governor has left Florida vulnerable to another Delta-like variant killer. Like it could be Omicron, by tying the hands of local authorities, sort of like the way that the draconian constraints on the unemployment benefit system left unemployed Floridians suffering immense hardship during last year's lockdown. But you know what? As bad as the collapse of that jobless benefit system was, it was an absolute non-factor in last year's elections. There were no consequences for anybody at the polls. So the conclusion to this, on the one hand and on the other hand analysis, is that the governor can push his agenda because he hasn't had to pay a political price for it. In fact, it's made him a conservative media darling. And unless Democrats in 2022 can find a way to appeal to those centrist independent swing voters and tag DeSantis with some of the failures on the pandemic, there's no incentive for the governor to do anything differently.
Yeah, it seems like DeSantis has basically concluded that people will take a little bit better economy in exchange for, some worse public health outcomes. That he thinks that people want a better economy and more freedom. And we'll see what the next election says. Well, the pandemic was certainly the biggest story of the last year, but another big story that carried over from 2020 into 2021 was the fallout from the 2020 election, which exploded on January 6th when a crowd of Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol. The event really did shock the nation, but any idea that the GOP would distance itself from Trump quickly vanished, and he now seems as dominant as ever in GOP politics. He's been down in Mar-a-Lago, basically lording over the party from his home in Palm Beach. His claims of election fraud have been so widely accepted among the GOP that even here in Florida, a state that he won pretty easily, there are efforts by the GOP base to call for election audits. DeSantis has resisted those calls so far, but he's pushing for a new police force that would investigate election fraud. Meanwhile, Florida has the most people arrested for storming the Capitol, and there are concerns about extremism in the state and the GOP taking an extreme turn under Trump's continued leadership. Antonio, it's still all about Trump, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I'm wondering why we ever thought it wouldn't be. Look, we said this before. Trump is the most tenacious political figure we have ever covered. He plays by his own rules, and he has redefined the political culture. The question is, has he changed it forever with his brand of no-holds-barred political WrestleMania? Look, I spent some time going back and assessing how he did it in the past year. Because, look, when he arrived in West Palm Beach on January 20 to begin his ex-presidency, he was torched politically. GOP operatives and donors we spoke to in the ensuing weeks and after the insurrection were keeping their distance. And within a year, no, actually within a span of a month, he was back in charge of the GOP. That was evident, Zach, at that CPAC summit we covered in Orlando in February. The thing about the Trump effect is that it has this conflicting, tortured duality. It has this severe dark side. At the same time, you can understand the appeal of it all. The dark side is that he is threatening the very essence of American democracy. The fact that so many Americans continue to believe the falsehood that the election was stolen from Trump is incredibly damaging to American democracy, and it's damaged without justification. The concerns being raised by former military officials and federal agencies that extremism and potentially violent militia groups are on the rise and have been emboldened by Trump is also a grim reality. The assault on elective democracy through so-called reforms that are, you know, also really aimed at suppressing votes. And the fact that January 6th, we are starting to fully understand, was a coup attempt. I mean, it is nearly unfathomably serious what happened that day. But then there is the appeal of Trumpism. And I don't mean the more popular policies like the tax cuts and trade deals and the like. I mean the visceral, you know, emotional appeal. This week, I came across a book that Trump wrote in 1997, almost 25 years ago. It was called The Art of the Comeback. And it's sort of a bookend book or bookend piece to The Art of the Deal. But in Art of the Comeback, Trump talks about how he survived the collapse of his real estate empire in the early 1990s. And the book starts with this line, quote unquote, "It never occurred to me to give up, to admit defeat." Yeah, that was one lesson he learned from his early 1990s comeback. And I think we can say that he's applied it to politics. You know, that's kind of the underlying appeal that so many Americans can see themselves in Trump because of his faults. You know, a business failure setback, a divorce, a personal embarrassment. And I don't know many people who haven't suffered one of those. And many of those are people who relate to Trump's never surrender, fight back like it's the end of the world mantra. Then add the showmanship. His base loves that political WrestleMania, the banter, the bravado, the theatrics. And look, those are the standards of the Trump political brand. And they have absolutely reshaped American politics. Now, Trump has remolded the way that, you know, we look at our political leaders. And although I'm not sure that the other wannabes out there can pull it off like Trump can. So, yeah, that's why it's all about Trump. But for reasons that are deeper and more profound and potentially transcendental than we thought.
And where does Florida fit into all this? You know, you look at the state and it's really it's been trending right for a while, but it's really taken a big rightward turn under Trump and become really the Trumpiest of certainly of the larger states and the large the swing states. You know, you see the most people who were arrested from January 6th, Florida had the highest number. It had the highest number of Proud Boys arrested, the highest number of Oath Keeper militia members arrested. You're seeing people like Michael Flynn, who was very involved in the Stop the Steal movement, you know, moving to Florida. Patrick Byrne, Sidney Powell. There's a lot of energy here in Florida around this election denialism, election trutherism, whatever you want to call it. I don't know if that's because Trump's here, if it's because of the demographics of the state. How does Florida fit into all this in your mind?
Well, I think Florida's a new Texas. I mean, we're sort of the geographical and political and ideological antithesis of California. For so long, people thought about California as the model of blue state. Well, Florida is going to be the model of the red state, not so much Texas. And I think that for that matter, this has become, you know, the center of the political universe for Republicanism and Trumpism. And you look at all the different political leaders in the conservative spectrum, on the Republican spectrum, that have been coming down to Mar-a-Lago to kiss the brass ring at, you know, with Trump, and starting with Kevin McCarthy, but all kinds of people. You know, Rick Scott, you know, went to give him an award.
And then you have DeSantis here, who is sort of like Trump in waiting, right?
Trump in waiting. But, you know, the interesting thing about Trump, and that's where, you know, we've talked about this throughout the year, this sort of every so often this seemingly brewing rivalry between the, you know, Trump and his political godson DeSantis, which is true. I mean, we covered that race. I mean, the reason that Ron DeSantis is governor is because he got the endorsement from Trump. I mean, that's how he won the primary and then went on to win the general election.
Yeah, it was incredible to see how Trump's endorsement just basically eviscerated Adam Putnam and the race was pretty much over.
But then, you know, there's been kind of this, you know, brewing rivalry in Sarasota. You know, DeSantis didn't go to that July rally, and then Trump didn't mention him. And then there was, you know, Trump saying, well, if DeSantis runs, I'll beat him like everybody else. And then DeSantis saying, well, it's ridiculous that even anybody's even talking about me running for president, even as he's running around all these, you know, early primary states and raising a ton of money. So that's going to be really interesting. The one thing, look, and we've heard this here in Palm Beach, which is the home base of the Trump, of the MAGA universe. And we've heard this where people will tell you, yeah, I love Trump, but, you know, DeSantis is Trump, but without the baggage. In other words, DeSantis gives us what Trump does, but DeSantis can win where Trump, you know, is either tweeting, he's kind of, they see Trump as somebody who's every so often shoots himself in the foot, whereas DeSantis really is a lot more politically savvy in that sense. So they'll tell you how much they like Trump because he's so genuine and he tells you like it is. But then they'll tell you, well, yeah, but, you know, DeSantis, you know, he's kind of like Trump, but without the baggage and a winnable in 2024. So it's going to be really interesting to see how things play out here.
Yeah. Another fascinating thing is that DeSantis has really resisted some of, you know, Trump's more far-fetched positions, especially most notably that, you know, kind of dancing around this idea of whether the election was stolen and not really getting fully behind these unfounded claims of election fraud. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how that plays out as Trump continues to make that sort of a litmus test for Republicans. Well, in many ways, 2021 was about the ongoing fallout from what happened in 2020. But in the political world, it also was about looking ahead to 2022. Well, in many ways, 2021 was about the ongoing fallout from what happened in 2020. But in the political world, it also was about looking ahead to 2022. DeSantis officially declared his reelection bid, and three prominent Democrats also launched campaigns for governor. Meanwhile, Democrat Val Demings stepped forward to take on Senator Marco Rubio. Florida also could play a big role in whether the House remains in Democratic control or flips to the GOP. And redistricting will be a big factor. That was a big story this year. The redistricting effort got underway. John, there was a lot of positioning this year around the 2022 election. Where do things stand as the year comes to a close?
Well, it does look like the field is set for the state's biggest races. Governor DeSantis will be running against three prominent Democrats seeking their party's nomination. That's Congressman Charlie Crist, Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried, and State Senator Annette Tadeo. And as you mentioned, it'll be Demings against Rubio. But while you know, Democrats still represent a third of Florida's registered voters, which is the same as Republicans, and also it's the third that is also goes to no party affiliated voters, the Democratic Party just seems to be in pretty woeful shape. Despite this kind of balance in registered voters. We mentioned these eye-catching offices of governor and U.S. senator, but this year the state's cabinet offices also are on the ballot. And with Fried leaving the agriculture commissioner's post, you know, for her run for governor, she right now is the only statewide elected Democrat in Florida. And there's no prominent Democrat running for ag commissioner. Nobody running for attorney general or chief financial officer either. Nobody of real significance. So it's likely Republicans will claim these state offices with incumbent attorney general Ashley Moody, Republican, and chief financial officer Jimmy Patronis, also a Republican. They're running for reelection. And the state's Senate president, Wilton Simpson, who's out there raising a lot of money, and he has a certain level of, attention as a Senate president heading into the session. While he's running for the seat that is being vacated by Fried, agriculture commissioner. So if Democrats can't unseat DeSantis or Rubio, they could be shut out of all statewide offices by this time next year. That's something that hasn't happened since, I think, since the Union occupation following the Civil War.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, the party just learned this week that three-term Democratic Congresswoman Stephanie Murphy from the Orlando area. She's not running for re-election this fall, opening up a seat in which is currently a Democratic-leaning district, but it's going to change somewhat, or maybe even radically, once the redistricting maps are approved by the legislature before the session ends in March. It's just hard to imagine, you know, at this point, how far the Democratic Party has fallen in the state. But Florida is certainly trending redder, and the inability of Florida Democrats to effectively fundraise and develop candidates and a winning message certainly looks like it's going to be, you know, exposed badly in the fall presidential midterm elections, when the party nationally is going to be struggling to retain the U.S. House and Senate. The view had been that the National Democratic Party would somehow bail out Florida's statewide candidates with, you know, money and staff. But the party is going to have plenty of fights across the country to engage in. And decisions involving Florida will, you know, really likely hinge on whether Democrats believe they have a chance of defeating DeSantis or Rubio. You very may well see National Democrats more active in some key Florida congressional races than at the top of the ticket, which would be a change in the pattern of previous years. Republicans, though, you know, they're going to have some of their own smaller dramas. Redistricting is certain to upset some careers. You could have some intra-party battles where incumbents are placed in the same district and kind of forced to run against each other. Or already there is at least one standout example of two Republican state House members that are looking to run for the same state Senate seat. So you're gonna have some of those kind of dramas going on. But the Republican challenge pales by comparison to Democrats. DeSantis is a fundraising machine, and the state GOP is doing well with its own campaign fundraising, you know, helped by the governor's high profile to a great extent. So as 2021 starts heading to the exits here, it kind of looks like Republicans have the momentum and are ready to expand their hold over Florida in the next year that's about to dawn. And because redistricting will help set the state's political balance going forward, it's likely that Republicans can bake in their advantage in these eventually approved district boundaries that are going to last for the next decade. So it's the dawn of maybe a bad year for Democrats.
And we talk a lot about positioning for 2022, but also, John, I mean, there's already positioning for 2024. A lot of the governor's policy proposals seem aimed at sort of a GOP primary electorate for the 2024 presidential race.
Yeah, I do think so. I mean, he's really doing things that will capture attention. You know, that Fox News base that's out there. The governor has already sued the Biden administration four times, at least Florida has, under the governor's watch. And of course, when you hear the governor, you know, ready to bash the Biden administration over a host of things, you know, the inflation, the supply chain problems, immigration has been a steady drumbeat from the governor. Those kind of things kind of resonate with that national base. And meanwhile, you know, he's raising a ton of money, which most of it will probably go to the 2022 reelection bid. But whatever is left over, and there's going to be more flowing in even as 2022 begins, he can find a way to, you know, restructure that into a political spending committee that will give him, you know, the opportunity to start traveling the state and increasing that profile even more once, I would say, 2023 begins. You know, this time next year, the governor, one would think, if he has a reelection behind him, he is then going to certainly be setting his sights on the White House.
Yeah, 2021, but we're already looking ahead to 2024. That's just how politics is these days. Well, we'll move on for our 2021 year in review number segment here. Antonio, you want to tell us what your year in review number is?
Yeah, I had 6 million, and that stands for the number of Floridians expected to travel this holiday season, according to AAA. That's 1.5 million more than last year, the auto group said. And there are two political messages for both Republicans and Democrats in Florida in this number. Here they are. First, Floridians have largely decided in 2021 that they're going to live their lives. I think by now everyone is aware of the seriousness of this illness. As I said before, 62,000 Floridians have died, and Omicron signals that the end to this pandemic is not in sight. And yet Floridians decided to hit the road. And when it comes to DeSantis and his calling sensible and smart public health measures insanity, look, I'm not hearing or seeing a massive grassroots uproar or grassroots pushback against his statements. And the second message is that millions of Floridians have hit the roadways and taken to the skies despite all this negativity about higher gasoline prices and inflation. So you know what? Rising costs did not keep almost a third of the state's residents from traveling this holiday. What lessons do we draw from that? Well, one may be that mandates in Florida just don't have broad appeal. And perhaps vaccine requirements, as smart as they are in protecting public health, just don't have wide support. And the political factions promoting them are going to have to wrestle with that. The second lesson is the economy. Look, inflation aside, the economy is booming. Unemployment is under 4% in Florida, and there are plenty of jobs to be had. And someone will need to take credit for that in 22. And whoever does successfully, I think, wins that election.
All right. A lot of folks have pent up demand to visit family members this year and enjoy the holidays. John, you want to tell us about your number?
Yeah, Zach, my 91.2 is the percent of jobs the state has recovered from the massive job loss that occurred during the spring of 2020, during the first wave of the COVID-19 pandemic. Just like Antonio, I'm looking a little bit at the economy here. You'll remember, you know, how so much was shut down back in March, April of 2020. Even Governor Ron DeSantis, you know, Mr. Free State Florida himself, he was closing bars, gyms, restaurants, and, you know, much of the state's economy for about a month in the spring of 2020. Well, when all that happened in Florida, the state lost almost 1.3 million jobs. And according to the state's Department of Economic Opportunity, that's the state's labor office, almost 1.2 million of those jobs are back, or about 91.2%. What's happening in Florida is happening across the nation. You know, unemployment has come down. Employers are having trouble finding workers in some industries, especially restaurants and service sectors. But the economy still remains disrupted by the pandemic. Not everyone is working for a variety of reasons. Some jobs that were held, have disappeared. These workers are now being called displaced in economic terms. Their fate is tied to a number of factors, whether it's, you know, companies having scaled back their operations during the pandemic and never fully recovering, the people who are still dealing with childcare issues, who, you know, it's not worth it to work, especially in a lower wage job, like so many in the Florida's tourist industry, which has been, you know, especially rattled during these times. Some workers have dropped out to seek more job training or education, and some just don't want to return to jobs that require a lot of personal interaction with customers because of a fear of the pandemic. So there's a lot of different causes of this lack of return to full employment, I guess. But the better unemployment benefits that existed for more than a year during the pandemic, they've largely dried up by the fall. So the argument that people are earning more being out of work than working, I don't think that really holds up. But so, you know, what you wind up with now is 91.2% of workers that were out of work during the pandemic are back, but it's still not full employment. And that might make, you know, some of us who do have jobs pause and give thanks this holiday season. But Governor DeSantis is always promoting the quality of Florida's economy, and how his keep everything open as much as possible is what we should be giving thanks for. But here, when you look at it, Florida's numbers are pretty good. A lot of the Northeast states and California, which experienced longer lockdowns, are still well below Florida's level, which I'm sure Governor DeSantis will remind us of. But we're not there yet. And DeSantis going into a reelection year next year, isn't it always the economy, stupid? And the satisfaction level of Florida voters with the economy and the direction of the state will clearly be a factor in whether they're ready to give him another 4 years in the governor's mansion. So DeSantis may well point at this 91.2% return to work as a victory, you know, better than many. But it still shows that a significant share of Florida households have not bounced back. And, even as a lot of the rest of the state has. And with Omicron on everybody's minds now, who knows how this election year recovery will go.
All right. So some interesting numbers in the economy, if you dig a little bit deeper. My number is 215 million. That's the amount of polluted water that was discharged into Tampa Bay after a breach in a containment wall at the old Piney Point fertilizer plant near Bradenton. Piney Point was a major environmental disaster, and sadly, it wasn't Florida's only environmental calamity to make national headlines in 2021. The state also saw a record number of manatee deaths, 1,075 as of this week, which is double the average number of annual deaths in recent years. And the state also experienced another terrible red tide outbreak that fouled Tampa Bay and the Southwest Florida coastline this year. These environmental problems were overshadowed by COVID, which is understandable when you have so many sick people in Florida. But the state's natural systems also are sick, and they only seem to be getting sicker. Back in 2018, when DeSantis was first running for governor, Florida's environmental problems were the most pressing issue in the state. Red tide and blue-green algae blooms were destroying Florida's water quality, harming both nature and the economy, and DeSantis campaigned as an environmental champion. He has worked to get more state money for environmental issues, but there's been little done to address the root causes of pollution, which is evident in a place like the Indian River Lagoon, where the total collapse of the ecosystem has led to the starving deaths of many manatees, which rely on seagrass for food. The seagrass is dying because of poor water quality. It's an old story in Florida and a sad one, and it's not likely to get better soon, but a new year brings new hope. That wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production guru this week, Chandler Hoeffel. And thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back next week with our predictions for 2022. Enjoy the holidays, everybody, and stay safe. We're out of here.